Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sorry. Pashushrutas tasya sandhis tasyapi amarshana mahashvam Tat sutas tasmad vishvaburu ajayata tasmad prashushrutas tasya Mahashvamstatsutastasmad Vishvabahur Ajayata Taz. There will be one purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. From Maru was born a son named Prashuta. From Prashutra came Sandhi. From Sandhi came Amarshana. And from Amarshana, a son named Mahasvan. From Mahasvan, Vishvabahu took birth. Text 8. From Vishvabahu came a son named Prasenajit. From Prasenajit came Takshaka. From Takshaka came Brihadbala, who was killed in a fight by your father. Text 9. All these kings in the dynasty of Ikshvaku have passed away. Now please listen as I describe the kings who will be born in the future. From Brihadbala will become Brihadrana. Text 10. The son of Brihadrana will be Urukriya, who will have a son named Vatsadriha. Vatsadriha will have a son named Prativoma. And Prativomya will have a son named Banu, from whom Divaka, the great commander of soldiers, will take birth. Text 11. Thereafter, from Divaka will come a son named Sahadev, and from Sahadev, a great hero named Brihadashva. From Brihadashva will come Banuman, and from Banuman will come Pratikshava. From Pratikshava, the son of Pratikshava will be Supratika. Text 12. Thereafter, from Supratika will come Marudev. From Marudev, Sanakshatra. From Sanakshatra, Pushkar. And from Pushkar, Antariksha. The son of Antariksha will be Sutapa. And his son will be Amitrajit. Text 13. From Amitrajit will come a son named Brihadraja. From Brihadraja will come Barhi, and from Barhi will come Kritanjaya. The son of Kritanjaya will be known as Rananjaya, and from him will come a son named Sanjaya. Text 14. From Sanjaya will come Shakya. From Shakya will come Shudhodha. From Shudhodha will come Langala. From Langala will come Prasenajit. And from Prasenajit, Shudraka. Text 15. From Shudraka will come Ranaka. From Ranaka will come Surata. And from Surata will come the Sumitra, ending the dynasty. This is a description of the dynasty of Brihadbala. Text 16. The last king in the dynasty of Ikshvaku will be Sumitra. After Sumitra, there will be no more sons in the dynasty of the sun god, and thus the dynasty will end. Chapter 13, text 1. Srila Shukadeva Goswami said, after beginning sacrifices, Maharaj Nimi, the son of Ikshvaku, requested the great sage Vasishta to take the post of the chief priest. At that time, Vasishtha replied, "My dear Maharaj Nimi, I have already accepted the same post in a sacrifice begun by Lord Indra." Text 2. "I shall return here after finishing the yajna for Indra. Kindly wait for me until then." Maharaj Nimi remained silent, and Vasishtha began to perform the sacrifice for Lord Indra. Text 3. Maharaj Nimi, being a self-realized soul, considered that this life is flickering. Therefore, instead of waiting long for Vasishtha, he began to perform the sacrifice with other priests. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Chanakya Pandit says, "Sariram shanavidvam si kalpantas daino guna." The duration of one's life in the material world may end at any moment. But if within this life one does something worthy, that qualification is depicted in history eternally. Here is a great personality, Maharaj Nimi, who knew this fact. In the human form of life, one should perform activities in such a way that at the end he goes back to home, back to Godhead. This is self-realization. Prabhupada is saying in this purport that in this life one should do something worthy. And if one does something worthy in this life, he can be depicted in history eternally. And it's quite interesting, in the previous verses, we're reading all the names of these different kings in the dynasty, in the past, and even those who will be in the future. So somehow the names of those personalities are considered significant enough to be placed within the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam for us to hear. But simply by hearing of those persons, somehow we become purified, even though we may not even know who they were, what they did, but they had some connection with Krishna or Krishna's devotee. Somehow something they did was considered very significant by the Lord. So what can we do to become worthy in the eyes of the Lord? There's a very nice description Srila Prabhupada gave once. I can't remember if it was on the appearance or disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but he was describing how you must please the spiritual master and how you make spiritual advancement by the mercy of the spiritual master by rendering service. And he says, was describing how in this way you're benedicted by the mercy of Krishna. And Prabhupada gave a very, very simple yet eloquent example in that regard. And he described that if you want to please a very wealthy man, you may have to give him something very great. You'll give him some big presentation, some gift that's worth a large amount of money, and then you may get his attention. Like if I wanted to get an audience with the Prime Minister of Canada, or President of the United States, or the President of India, I don't think I would rate. I would have to do something to get their attention. So to get the attention or please the great man is a very difficult thing. But Prabhupada described that if that great personality has a small son, say a 3 or 4 year old son, and Prabhupada said, if you go up to that son and you give him a little candy, Prabhupada said, you give him a little lozenge that's maybe worth a penny, 2 pennies. So naturally you give a child a little candy and they're happy. And then Prabhupada explained, then that very wealthy man, he sees, oh, you've pleased my son. So by a very small offering to someone who is dear to that wealthy man, you got his attention. So Prabhupada said in the same way that by serving the spiritual master sincerely, one can get the benediction of Krishna. And I would just like to give an example in the life of one of my godbrothers who recently passed away. And it was quite interesting on, I think it was Monday at the lunch prasadam, they were reading about, from Prabhupada Lilamrita, about the big Cross Meridian Pandal Festival where like thousands and thousands of people came in. I believe Radhanath Maharaj was there, correct? Radhanath Maharaj was there. There was one devotee from our temple in Vancouver. He was also there. And he recalled that incident, how the big pandal and how Radhanath Maharaj went up to the stage. He never ended up joining until 1974, but he was there. And he was a very interesting personality, and he became very much dedicated to book distribution. Not so much that he would distribute books, but he was the devotee in the background, always making sure the books were ordered. There were so many traveling parties going out of the Vancouver temple at that time. He was always making sure the books were sent out on time, that everyone had supply of books. He would send the maha prasadam. That was his life. He slept in the book room. The book room was half the size of the room next to here, and it was full of books. He would sleep in that room. Actually, he would sleep in a chair sitting up. Sometimes I would put the deities to rest at night, and I would go downstairs to lock the basement door, and he would be in the book room chanting this Gayatri. And in the morning before I woke the deities, I would go downstairs to unlock the basement door so devotees could get in. He would still be there chanting his Gayatri, sitting up. He lived in the book room. So that was his life and his soul, just book distribution for quite a few years. But somehow, by the influence of time and different events, he became a little slack in his spiritual life. And gradually he stopped chanting his rounds. And he engaged in activities which from some perspectives could be considered very fallen. But somehow he still remained in his somewhat near to the associated devotees, but his spiritual life, his chanting and reading had stopped. And he was having very serious problems in his spiritual life. So this went on for maybe 6-7 years. And he later told me there was an incident that happened that rekindled his spiritual life. And so again, I just want to just reflect back how this devotee, when he was serving Prabhupada, his focus was book distribution. How to serve the devotees who were distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. That was his whole focus. But gradually he lost it. So he told me that during that time when he had stopped chanting and stopped reading Prabhupada's books, he got invited to a sangha of another association of Vaishnavas. And there was one individual, he's a former sannyasi in that institution, who was giving a class on the 9 processes of devotional service. And if anyone here is a book distributor, they might not want to hear this. What he said was very offensive. So this individual giving a class, he was talking about the 9 processes, and he said, book distribution is not included in the 9 processes of devotional service. And so this devotee, Dadi Hartu Prabhu, he said he felt like he was punched in the head. He said it was, to him, it was just like a slap in the face. And he said he got up, he walked out of that assembly, he went straight to his home, got his japa bag, started chanting 16 rounds a day, and started reading Bhagavatam 3-4 hours a day. Somehow Krishna arranged a situation that would rekindle his spiritual life. And Prabhupada actually described that in the Bhagavatam, that when a devotee, if he falls from devotional service, he doesn't exactly undergo material existence, but Krishna is making arrangements for his rectification. So somehow Krishna acted through that devotee who made that offensive statement, and it rekindled this devotee's spiritual life. And then this last November, this devotee passed away. And the evening before he passed away, I actually had a dream of Srila Prabhupada. And in the dream, Srila Prabhupada was saying, I never reject anyone. Prabhupada said this 3 times in the dream, I never reject anyone. And then that devotee, he drove up my driveway in his car. He was having a heart attack, and he couldn't get out of the car. He was leaning on his horn. I had to arrange to get him to the hospital. And then he passed away a few days later. But you could see, but whatever service he had rendered for Srila Prabhupada, Krishna accepted that and took that as something very important and dear. So anyone who renders any service to Srila Prabhupada, in whatever small way, it's a very important service. Just like Maharaj was saying, that how we have this flower festival and everyone's plucking petals, and it's not like a competition or a race or something, but we're just all trying to serve Krishna. And that's the mood of devotional service, that everyone, no matter what small contribution they're making, it's considered very important to Krishna. And although sometimes in devotional service we may have contributions, like in book distribution marathons, there's a type of competition, but it's a very loving type of competition. In Canada they have, I think they have it other places in the world, they have paraplegic Olympics. They have big sporting events, like, you know, they have running and soccer and so many games, but they have it for people who are crippled or maybe have some mental challenge. So they were having one of these events in Canada, and it was actually like a championship, big, big event. People from all over Canada, these best physically challenged athletes were competing. So there was a race, and they were running, and there was a person in the lead, and the person behind him, and the person in the lead collapsed just before the finish line. And the person behind him stopped, picked the person who had fallen up, and helped him across the finish line. And so there was a lot of media there, and they asked the person, why did you stop and pick him up? The goal is to win the race. And he said, that would not have been fair. Would not have been fair. So he had this mood of compassion and love. So devotional service is like that, that there's many devotees on many different levels of devotional service, rendering different types of service. Maybe some services might seem more significant, some might seem less significant, but they're all, in the eyes of the Lord, equally important, very important. And when in the association of Vaishnavas, there is that mood of everyone helping each other advance in devotional service and honoring whatever service they're rendering, you have a very nice atmosphere. Like I see in the Chaupati temple here, it's a very wonderful atmosphere. There is very much a mood of respect and compassion and love amongst the devotees. And it creates a very wonderful atmosphere. And I can see also in the temple here that atmosphere of love and respect, it also fosters a great amount of creativity. You see the devotees from the Chaupati temple and who've come out of the Chaupati programs, they're very creative in their preaching. Even the restaurant here is so creative. The temple is so beautiful and creative. Everything is so creative. That mood of love and respect and appreciation, it just nurtures the human spirit so much more. So it's a very very important thing to have that mood of love and respect amongst Vaishnavas. Srila Prabhupada gave a nice description once of love, and he described that, he began by saying, why do we care for the body? He said, no one cares for a dead body. If I were to expire right now, you would probably just want to get my body out of here and get rid of it. No one cares for a body. So Prabhupada said that no one cares for a dead body. You burn it, you bury it, it's finished. But yet we care for the body, Prabhupada said, because of the presence of the soul. Because the soul was within the body, we care for the body. And Prabhupada said, similarly, we care for others. We care for our god brothers, our god sisters, our family members, our community members, because of the presence of the soul. The soul is within everyone. And Prabhupada said, in this way, the love goes to Krishna. That by we take care of ourselves, we take care of our God brothers, God sisters, our families. Prabhupada said, the love goes to Krishna. It's very pleasing to Krishna. But Prabhupada said a very interesting thing in that conversation. The next thing he said was, he said, but the interruption is illusion. He said, the interruption is illusion. So sometimes we have very loving relationships with God brothers, God sisters, spouses, family members, friends. And sometimes there might be tensions. Sometimes there might be arguments. Sometimes there might be enmity. Sometimes there might even be fighting, ill feelings. So why is that? So Prabhupada explained, it's illusion. Some illusion comes before us and we lose that sense that Krishna is within all our hearts and he's accepting love in that way. But Maya is, she only wants those who are very sincere and pure to be able to approach Krishna. So she is placing these little tests before us. She might be throwing some dust in her eyes so that I can't see that you're spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna, and I might treat you in some disrespectful way. But that is illusion. So Maya is very, very difficult, and very powerful, and very influential. Like generally, Vaishnavas, actually even Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj, sometimes he said this, that the devotees are very kind to everyone, except sometimes to the devotees. Sometimes the people we are most familiar with, most friendly with, most intimate with, sometimes compassion and love fails. Sometimes we lose that sense of love and compassion with those who we are very close to. And that, again, is Maya. It's the illusion that Maya places for us. So why does compassion fail? Why do we fail to be compassionate to those we love the most? Why is it a very bewildering thing? Very bewildering. Why is Krishna not allow us to see him everywhere, within everyone? Somehow compassion fails. In the United States of America, there's a very interesting researcher who made his life's goal to understand why compassion fails. Why does compassion fail? Sometimes there's different. There could be a spectrum we could define of the failure of compassion, from maybe I think some ill thought of you. Maybe I say some ill words to you, maybe I become angry at you, maybe I have a physical confrontation with you. That would be the extreme end. Even on the extreme end, there would be such things as spousal abuse. Marriage is an institution of love, but sometimes there is actually fighting and even physical abuse within the institution of marriage. So how can compassion fail? Why does compassion fail? So this individual, he tried to understand why compassion fails. And he began his researching with persons who probably had the greatest failure of compassion that you can imagine. He began researching multiple murderers who were in prison for life with no chance of getting out, very serious criminals. And he would ask them, what are your goals in life? What do you value? What is important to you? And even these persons who were murderers, very great criminals, what they valued was, they were saying things like, I want to be a better person. I want to contribute to society. I want to be a better husband. But somehow, what they valued and their actions were completely disconnected. Somehow, because of that disconnection, their compassion failed. And some of these individuals were even in jail because they killed some loved one. Inconceivable. Someone could kill someone they actually love. Inconceivable. So sometimes compassion fails. And sometimes compassion fails because he found we have sometimes scars. Like Radhanath Maharaj was saying in one talk here, how we all need to feel, he said, loved and, what did he say, cared for? I think he said that. We all need to feel loved and cared for. We all have that very strong need as spiritual souls. We need affection. Everyone has a need for affection. Prabhupada described that in one purport, how he said, affection is a symptom of life. Affection is a symptom of life. And if there's no affection, and there was actually a very tragic experiment that was done after the Second World War. Some researchers were trying to understand sometimes if a child experiences some trauma and is withdrawn, or anyone experiences some trauma, it takes some time to recover. So they were trying to understand what exactly helps people to recover from different traumas in their life. So they began research by taking little kittens and removing them from their mother so the kitten would get no affection, or little puppies or small animals, and separate them from the mother. And they could observe that the little animals would experience some stress or trauma. They would put the little animal back with its mother, and they would measure how long it took for that animal to become peaceful. So after the Second World War, there was a lot of orphans. And they thought, well, take a couple of these little orphan infants, babies, and do an experiment. So they thought it would be a similar thing. They would just give the little child no affection, no touch, just the necessities of life, food and water, no human contact. And they thought after some time they would give the infant contact and they would measure how long it would take for the child to recover from the trauma of that separation. But what they didn't understand is the immense need of the human being for affection. And the tragic thing was those infants died. Affection was withdrawn, they actually died. So when Prabhupada said affection is a need of the soul, it's a symptom of life, that is a very literal thing. Affection, we are maintained by loving affection. And to the degree that we have loving, affectionate relationships within our families and communities, the degree to which we will flourish as individuals, as families, and as a society. So that is a very important element in spiritual life, is that affection. But yet sometimes we experience, I may think of someone in a way that's not very affectionate, I may say something that's not very affectionate, I may do something that's not very affectionate, but why? Somehow that love and affection, it failed. And what this researcher found was that sometimes we all experience in our lives that, maybe to different degrees, that we've been hurt in some way. Especially if you're a child and if someone is always criticizing you, putting you down, you're unintelligent, you're stupid, you're this, you're that. It places a weight on the shoulder of the child. It actually creates a scar. Greg Prabhu, when I was just here for the flower festival. Gary. So he recently had a shoulder operation. So you wouldn't go up to him and give him a big hug because his shoulder is very sensitive, right? He'd probably be a little guarded. If you just came up and just slapped him on the shoulder, he'd probably push you away because he has a very sensitive spot. So in the same way, sometimes we have these scars. Someone may have said something disrespectful. Maybe we've been hurt in some way, to greater or lesser degrees. And if something touches that emotional scar we have, just as someone might want to protect their hurt shoulder, or if I had a broken foot and you walk near me, I'd probably just want to push you away. We may react somehow if someone touches that. Sense that scar. Just like a simple example might be, sometimes this happens with grihasthas, like prasadam's late. Come home and Mataji is a little late preparing prasadam. And the husband, he becomes a little angry. So why is he? Maybe, do I do that sometimes? So why would I become angry? Jamasmi, I'll fast all day. So prasadam is late, why am I becoming angry? Is the issue prasadam is 5 minutes late? Or is the issue maybe that prasadam is 5 minutes late, I feel uncared for or unloved? And that hits a nerve, and that nerve causes me to react. So many times in our lives, these kind of negative reactions, it's something within we haven't really dealt with, some little scar or something that we need to deal with and heal and clean. And that's why it's very important that Srila Rupa Goswami recommended that Guhyam Akati Prichati, that one should reveal one's mind in confidence and hear in confidence that we have some problem in spiritual life. Maybe we sense something within, some inner pain, some hurt. We should reveal that to someone, because by revealing those thoughts to someone, it's actually very purifying and very healing to the soul. And on the other end of the spectrum, that if we do not reveal those things within our hearts, those little pains and we're trying to work with, they tend to become more and more buried within us and can cause these different types of negative reactions. So very, very important, Prabhupada encouraged us to reveal one's mind in confidence. And for those of you who are grihasthas, Prabhupada actually said amongst husband and wife, he said there should be no secrets. He said the husband reveals his mind to the wife reveals the mind to the husband. And Prabhupada said, in this way there's no secrets, and he said, in this way love develops on the basis of hearing. So it's very, very much important within our lives to have these close, loving relationships and not bury those little things within us that can eat away at our consciousness and cause us to act in ways that are very un-Vaishnava. Because in the temple, we behave so nicely, we're so respectful, but sometimes we go in our ashrams or in our homes and close the door, and sometimes our behavior might be a little different. We may become a little casual, a little forgetful, and we may behave in ways that, if you look closely, they're not so Vaishnava. So Prabhupada, he wanted us to mold our life in such a way that we could be Krishna conscious always. We could always remember Krishna. We want Sri Sri Radha Gopinath to be present in our hearts, not just in the temple, but when we're outside the temple walls, when we're in the ashram with the doors closed, when we're in our homes, the doors are closed. We want the Lord to actually come within our lives fully. And that requires us to see that the Lord is within the heart of everyone. So yoga is about controlling the mind, Bhagavad Gita, the whole 6th chapter is very much about this process of yoga. And Arjuna is saying to Krishna, Chanchalam hi mana Krishna, that the mind is restless and turbulent and obstinate and difficult to control. And Krishna agreed. He said, yes, I agree. It's very difficult to control. But Krishna said, it's possible by constant practice and detachment, Krishna said. Asam saya maha baho mano junigraham chalam abhyasena tukuntana. So Krishna says that by this constant practice and detachment, one can control the mind. And Prabhupada described in that purport that the process of hearing is the most important process in the control of the mind. Because by hearing about Krishna, the mind becomes attracted to Krishna and detached from everything that draws the mind away from Krishna. So it's very important that we hear and remember. We hear and remember. So in our lives, we all experience those opportunities where our mind can go so many different places, or may think some envious thoughts, some critical thoughts, some fault-finding thoughts, so many negative things. There's so many stimulations that can send us in those directions, but we have a choice. We have free will. Like Prabhupada described how we have free will, because you cannot force love. Love is spontaneous. So that means there's the option to not be loving. We have the option to be critical and fault-finding and envious and bitter. We have that option also. But we have a choice. And in every instant, every circumstance, and every little provocation, there's a little opportunity for us to make that choice. Am I going to react with love and compassion and respect? Or am I going to react with anger and fault-finding and criticism? We have that choice. It's our responsibility. We were discussing with the Grihastha counselors the other night this verse, Tate nukampam shushamek shamanu bunjana evatma kritam vapagam ridvag vapur bir viridams namaste jivetuyu mukti pade sadayabak. But how a pure devotee, he sees everything, every instance, every circumstance as the hand of the Lord. And even if there's some adverse situation or circumstance, he folds his hands and he thinks, Krishna, you're so kind. I deserve so much more suffering in my life, but you've given me this token for my purification. Thank you, my dear Lord. And if he's in a very good situation, the devotee thinks, this is Krishna's mercy. I'm not worthy of this. He's put me in some favorable situation to render him service. So every circumstance, every situation. And Prabhupada also in the 10th canto, one of the last purports he dictated. You can actually see this in Yadubara's video of Prabhupada lying on his bed. Prabhupada is so thin, he can barely speak. Jai Vedamaraj is holding the microphone to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is saying, everything is moving by the will of Krishna. And he's saying, if one can see this, Prabhupada said, this consciousness, Prabhupada said, is Krishna consciousness. Everything. Everything. So even those small things in our lives, those small provocations, those small irritations, that's actually the hand of Krishna somehow placing that situation before us for our purification. And at that moment, we have an opportunity to make a choice. We can fold our hands and we can see how Krishna has put me in this situation. How can I utilize it to help myself advance and to help everyone advance? Or we can fault-find and be critical and envious. But if we become fault-finding and envious and critical in those situations, what happens to our ticket back to Godhead? Because Prabhupada said this, how this mukti pade sadayabak, one who has this attitude, it is his, Prabhupada described, it's like the right of a son to inherit the estate of the father. If you had that attitude, Prabhupada said, you inherit the right to go back to Godhead. So every time we're critical, fault-finding, envious, thinking malicious thoughts, it's like we have this very valuable ticket back to Godhead and we're just like tearing pieces off and we're mutilating that ticket. And if we mutilate it too much, it might be invalid. We might have to stay in the mature world and try to get a new ticket. So a very important, I think, thing we can glean from this verse is how, Prabhupada said, if someone does something worthy in this life, just excuse me for 1 second, my legs are falling asleep. I'm just gonna move my foot here. Now, if one does something small for Krishna, even, it's very much noted by Krishna. So every devotee is a very, in the eyes of Krishna, every devotee is very valuable and very lovable. Very important, very precious. So it's very much incumbent upon us to always maintain that attitude of seeing the importance of every individual devotee who comes into our lives and to never lose that vision and never let Maya interrupt that very much important heart-to-heart loving connection. So I would like to end there, and if anyone has any questions or discussion. Okay. I'd like to thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.